It's a real pleasure to be back again. I have been properly forewarned by Paul that this group is something else. I did forget to fast, so but I have some prayer partners at home to help out. People management is a very important topic. The brief to me was, Alex, can you develop a program to help our people manage people better? And I said, that's interesting, because pastors are supposed to be people. But I'm a pastor, more active before than now. And the tendency is the people we look at is the congregation. And we tend to go back to the office and don't see people. They're just, you know, people to do things for us. And when I say people management, I'm referring more to the people in the office, okay? Because you guys are good with people in the congregation. We're talking about people in the office, people in the team. Contrary to conventional wisdom, people management is not a touchy-feely kind of concept. There are actually a lot of hard concepts in this soft area. It involves a lot of structures and processes. I'm talking about six ways to become a better people manager, but we will actually talk about only five ways, because one of the six ways is developing managerial competence, which we did the last time, okay? So I'll just mention it as a topic, but we won't discuss it. So six ways to become a better people manager, but actually we'll deal with only five of those ways. Okay, I guess you know, everyone knows everybody, but I just want to have a quick icebreaker. I want teams of six, okay? So those two tables is one team. These tables are one team. The last two, the front two, this is one team. And then I have a problem. These are nine people.
We don't have to include them.
Okay.
No, we're six.
Ito. So I have one table hanging out there. Can you be one team? Okay. Okay, just face one another and ask three questions, okay? Ask three questions of your teammates. I know you know your names and what you do in Victory, but I want you to ask three questions. How long have you been in the ministry? Say something unique about yourself. And what do you expect from this day, this workshop, okay? How long have you been in the ministry, in Victory? Say something unique about yourself, and what do you expect from the workshop, okay? You have 4 minutes ready. Go. Try to meet as many of your teammates as possible. 3 minutes, correction. All right, time's up. Time's up. Who is the longest in the ministry? Longest in the ministry? Years? 28? 28 years? Okay. 25 years? Newest in the ministry, newest. Dennis? 4 years? 4 years? 3 years? Okay. 3 years?
Wow. He's still in probation.
Big range, okay?
Still sorry? In probation.
Okay. Most interesting uniqueness in your group? Most interesting uniqueness? Sunny? What is the uniqueness of Sunny? Other than himself?
Is unique just like the rest of us. Now, unique. Yeah, we're unique. Common. Ano nga ba? What was that?
Hey, what is it? What is it?
He's actually been a pastor at the time, the moment we got saved. He's been a pastor
already. Okay, all right.
He's the longest running pastor.
All right. Any other group? Interesting uniqueness.
I think he's a pastor when Rex Humbert is already.
We have here a pastor that can do a flying kick.
A pastor who can do a flying kick. Wow, okay.
Head spin.
A head spin. Okay, head spinning pastor, all right. Expectations. What do you expect from the workshop? Expectations. All right, good. That's going to make my job easy. Yes, Julius.
I expect to learn the balance of the management and the ministry side, because I think when I'm in this setting, when you say the people in the office, I think I'm more on the just strictly the management side. And so if someone's not doing their job, it's just ax them right away. And so, but of course, ministry is a little different. And so I don't think I've really learned the balance yet. And I have to do that. So.
Does Julius speak for the class? Or do you have other expectations? Okay. Some possible attitudes, okay? I work in the spiritual realm. Why do I need to learn how to manage people? Isn't that too earthy? That's a very typical temptation among pastors. People who work for the Lord ought not to be so fussy about this stuff, right? We tend to throw this to people when they complain about work. Hey, this is for the Lord. What are you talking about? Okay? And that is crushing, terribly crushing on people. Things are managed, people are led, period. I mean, with all due respect to our wonderful speaker several months ago. People are managed. I mean, do you know your spouse's hot button? Your wife's hot button? Now, when you say it, she's going to get upset. Yeah? And do you avoid it? That's management. That is people management, okay? You know, what the speaker, the guy who came here, Stephen. What he meant was, you know, people are not things. Yes, of course. And people should not be used. Managing is not necessarily using people. Okay? So people are managed. Like it or not, we do manage people. We have to manage people to harness their strength to contribute to the organization. Some questions, therefore. Can you be a good leader in any job, pastoral or any job, without good people management or supervisory skills? Can you be a leader if you're not a good manager or supervisor? Or can you be a good supervisor and manager if you do not have the leadership skills to influence people? Speaking of supervisor, manager, and leader, is there a difference? Okay, what on earth do they mean? Let's bust the myth. In my opinion, it's a myth. There's no difference between supervision, management, and leadership. Webster says supervision is the critical watching or directing of activities or a course of action. Management is the conducting or supervising of something, the judicious use of means to accomplish an end. And leadership is the capacity to direct on a course or in a direction. As you can see, there's tremendous overlap among these concepts. Essentially, you can't be good in anyone unless you are good in the others. Okay. Corporate definition. Supervisors and managers, while varying in scope or magnitude, both have the same basic function, which is to plan, lead, organize, and control. Supervisor generally refers to lower levels of management, while manager and director or vice president refers to higher levels of management. I mean, in a corporation, once you get to supervisory level, i.e. you are no longer rank and file, okay? Technically, you can't join the union anymore. As a supervisor, you are part of the management team. The management team is composed of all supervisors up to the CEO. So even in corporations, there's no distinction in terms of concept between supervisor and CEO. By the way, supervision is not a low-level thing. It is a concept. As president of Del Monte, my supervisor was the chairman of the board. Okay, he was the chairman of the board a supervisor? Yes. Who did he supervise? Well, the board members and the president. Okay. As president, did I supervise people? Yes. I had 9 direct reports, vice presidents and directors. So was I a supervisor? Yes. So supervision is a concept that is not level neutral. Okay? It's grade neutral. Okay, you can be a supervisor as chairman of the board, or you can be a supervisor as you are supervising rank and file people. For as long as someone is reporting or responsible to you, you are a supervisor. You are also a people manager. You are also a leader. The primary, or the first supervisors, by the way, are parents. Okay, we supervise children. We manage our children. We lead our children. The corporate definition of leaders, supervisors and managers who, by virtue of their position alone, exercise authority over people under them. So in corporations, you are a leader by virtue of your position. That is the classical and the old definition. There's a newer definition. It says, supervisors or managers whose position, track record, attitude, and relational skills elicit such respect from people that they exercise remarkable influence over them. So leadership by position is the classic definition, but leadership by influence is the new definition. In fact, leadership is now defined as influence. Does God want us to become better managers? Yes. There are a lot of examples in the Bible. Adam was in charge of the Garden of Eden. He was the manager of the Garden of Eden. He was the cultivator. He was the overseer. Joseph was the COO to Pharaoh. He was in charge of building up food inventories in preparation for the anticipated famine. Moses was the leader of the Israelites. Was he a good manager? Actually, no. He was a lousy manager. He needed counsel from the first management consultant in the Bible, his father-in-law, Jethro. And Jethro told Moses, Anak, you're killing yourself. You know, you're doing everything. You have to learn to delegate. So Moses was a good leader, lousy manager. Daniel, bureaucrat, technocrat of the highest order. He was in charge of an area of Nebuchadnezzar's kingdom during the Babylonian captivity. And he was such an excellent manager and people leader that when his enemies tried to go after him, they could not find anything to pin on Daniel because he was an excellent manager. And of course, servants in the parable of the talents, 3 people with varying degrees of entrepreneurial and management abilities. Basically, the message is this: God expects us to be good managers, okay? Not only of our congregations, but of our staff, okay? Our team. Okay, as pastor or church admin worker, why do I need to be a better people manager? Well, I've got some. I thought I'd protect myself with some biblical support here. One is to glorify God. In 1 Corinthians 10:31, in whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. We honor God by being excellent people managers. And I mean it when I say excellent. I mean, have you heard of Alexander the Average? He didn't make the cut. You see, it was his first cousin, Alexander the Great, who made it. Because, excellence, nothing under excellence will make the cut. We must become good people managers to maximize the effectiveness of the few workers in the harvest. Sabi ng Bible, there are few workers in the harvest. So, hey, if there are only few workers, we dare not mismanage the few workers that God has put under our charge. I mean, I was talking to Paul, and I was telling him, you know, us church people, we are notorious in messing up volunteers. Okay? The typical volunteer in the church is, no one tells me what to do. And I do a lot of work, and no one encourages me. I'm lost. And if you will hear it from volunteers, they say, what kind of organization is this? It's just that we get away with a lot of affection. People love pastors so much that the congregations are very forgiving. We dare not squander the grace that is bestowed on us. And I'm speaking from both ends of the situation here, having been a pastor and also a volunteer. So there's a lot of affection, a lot of a benefit of the doubt, but we dare not squander that grace. We need to be good people managers to be a good steward of resources put under our care. God will hold us accountable. Matthew 25:19. How we manage the resources, both human and material, that he entrusts to us. And finally, to redeem the time. We are to make the most of our time. That clearly implies the need for wisdom in not only time management, but people management. Okay? Once again, we pastors are atrocious in mismanaging the time of our volunteers. We tend to, look at ourselves too highly, and therefore our time too highly, and look at the time of people too lowly. And if you put yourself in the shoes of your volunteers, you can say, "Wow, I do that." Yes, you do. Yeah. So we need to become better people managers, because the principle is this: if there is one business that is truly a people business, it's church, okay? Church is the one true, real people business. We become saving people. People in general, it's God's business. And we are God's business managers, okay? People is God's business, and we are his business managers. So the conclusion is, there are leaders who lack management or people management skills. And there are managers or supervisors who lack leadership skills. And in varying degrees, some of you are excellent leaders, but not excellent managers. Some of you are excellent managers and not good leaders. And each one must make an account of himself so that you can identify where you need to improve. And I'll tell you this, brothers, the reason is our position is so critical in the kingdom, and our responsibility is so huge. There's a Japanese proverb that goes like this: trees die from the top. Okay? Trees die from the top. It is a botanical law. If ever you have mowed a garden, I'm into gardening now. Pag nag-retire ka na, mahilig, bigla kang magkakahilig sa gardening. Okay? I realize if there's no rain, the grass dies. Or so I thought. Because once a small sprinkling of water comes, the grass lives again. You know why? Because plants die from the top. The roots are the last to go. In Del Monte, we have a 17,000-hectare plantation. It's a small province filled with pineapple. If we want to see if the fruits are healthy, we just go to the plantation and look at the tips of the plants. If the tips of the plants are green and robust, then we know the plant is healthy. if the tips of the plants are brown or brownish, we know the plant is sick or dying. Because plants, trees die from the top. That Japanese proverb applies, that botanical law applies to human organizations as well. Human organizations die from the top. If the leader is sick, the organization will be sick or is sick. As the leader goes, so goes the organization. Okay? The success and effectiveness of an organization, church, business, family, basketball team, you name it, depends on the effectiveness of the leader. Have you heard of Lehman Brothers? Yeah. When the Lehman Brothers investment bank, when their leaders made a mistake, you're supposed to borrow only maximum of $20 for every dollar of equity you have. No, 10 is a good ratio. They borrowed about 27. Okay? It was a mistake. And when the leaders of Lehman Brothers made a mistake, Lehman Brothers went belly up. Tens of billions of dollars of wealth evaporated. Tens of thousands of people lost their jobs. Even their retirement was lost. I mean, I'm able to teach you because I retired from Del Monte, because I had retirement money from which I am living on its interest. Imagine if you went to the HR and said, I'm retiring already. Give me my retirement pay. And HR says, sorry, we lost it. That's what happened to the Lehman Brothers people. As those leaders made a mistake, the entire organization made a mistake. Not all organizations go belly up like Lehman Brothers. But because of poor leadership, because of poor people management, many organizations languish in mediocrity. In fact, their people suffer from a toxic work environment. And work-life balance becomes an issue because there is no balance. Okay, it is too imbalanced. One of my favorite leadership authors is Henry Blackaby. One of my favorite leadership books is Spiritual Leadership. If you have not read that, wonderful book to read. He said, society longs for statesmen, but it only gets politicians. Okay. But let's bring that to the workplace. Our people long to work for leaders, but typically they only get bosses. There's a very thin line, but a very clear line differentiating a boss and a leader. And by the way, in bosses, there is a continuum. On the one end of that continuum are tyrants. On the other hand are popularity seekers. Okay? The tyrant is a guy who goes for results even at the expense of relationships. The popularity seeker goes for relationships at the expense of results. Either extreme does not work. But many people managers, many leaders fall into this either-or trap. I'm either a production type guy and I don't really care for people, or I'm a people guy and I will sacrifice production. Jim Collins, my other favorite author, said, we must subvert the tyranny of the or. O-R, that I can, to be productive, I cannot be a people person. Or to be a people person, I cannot be a productive manager. It's either or. Somebody, Jim Collins, hey, subvert the tyranny of the or and embrace the genius of the end. You can be a people person and still be productive. You can be a productivity-oriented person and still be a people-oriented. You can be results-oriented and still be a relational leader. And the secret is to learn how to become a better people manager. The greatest need and most underdeveloped potential in organizations today is the potential for leadership or people management. I'm going to give you a very short quiz. 5 seconds, okay? 5 seconds. I'll ask you two questions. You have 5 seconds to answer. Okay? And I want you to either memorize or write down your answer somewhere. And I hope you're not sitting beside your boss. If you are, just cover your answer, okay? In a scale of 10, first question, in a scale of 10, 1 being the lowest, 10 being the highest, some of you are so workaholic, you're writing the question, you don't have to. In a scale of 10, 1 being the lowest, 10 being the highest, rate the department or the team or the church in which you work. In a scale of 10, 1 being the lowest, 10 being the highest, rate the department or team in which you work. 1, lousiest team on earth, I want out. 10, I'd like to retire in this team. Okay? So on a scale of 10, 5 seconds. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Time's up. Second question. In a scale of 10, 1 being the lowest, 10 being the highest, rate the leader of the department in which you work. The leader of the team or the department in which you work. 1, very bad leader. 10, he walks on water. Okay? 5 seconds. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay, now, without showing anyone those numbers, without showing me those numbers, I want you to look at those numbers and give me a comment. What do they look like? How do they look like? How do they relate to one another? Same? Almost the same? Almost the same. How many points difference? One? Okay. Almost the same, 1 point? Same? 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 Okay. Same? Okay. 1 point? Okay. Works all the time. Okay. If you rated the leader high, you will rate the department high. If you rated the leader low, you will rate the department low. If you rated the leader middling, the department will be middling. Okay? Because of the truism, as the leader goes, so goes the team. Okay? As the leader goes, so goes the team. In one seminar, a woman raised her hand and she said, Alex, my leader is a 4. You can tell her leader was not in the seminar, okay? My leader is a 4. Our team is an 8. But she said, I agree with you. I said, why do you agree with me? Well, she said, our leader was just appointed in our team. Newly appointed. And he is not a very good leader. She used a more colorful word than that, actually. Okay? But she said, I agree with you because if he does not change, we will all become 4s. Okay? Because as the leader goes, so goes the organization. Okay? As the pastor goes, so goes the congregation. As the pastor goes, so goes the staff. Okay? So, if you ever complain about your staff, I want you to go to the men's room and look at the mirror. There lies the problem and the solution. Okay? You are it, brother. You are it. So, the first issue is the leader. Okay? How good a people manager am I? Okay? Oh, by the way, if you ever complained about your family, I want you to go back to the men's room and look at the mirror. Okay? If you ever complain about your spouse, look at the mirror. The first issue is the leader. Okay? As the leader goes, so goes the team. Okay. So how good a people manager are you? How good a manager or people manager are you? What we have here is a self-appraisal. What you have there in your workbook, do you have it? Self-appraisal? How good a manager, people manager am I? Okay? I want you to take, 10 minutes, Because at the start of the workshop, I want you to have a benchmark. Okay? I got this from the Del Monte Performance Evaluation Form. Okay? I paraphrased it a bit. Okay? It has two parts. One is the performance evaluation, and second part, work methods evaluation. In the performance evaluation, I only say that I achieve results expected of me. Actually, here in corporate world, you will have 8 to 10 goals for the year. But I just put one line, that I achieve results expected of me. There is a 5-point rating scale. One is outstanding, 2 very good, 3 good, 4 needs improvement, and 5 unacceptable. If you put a 5 there, you ought to fire yourself. Okay, because people who get 5 in corporations are out the door, close of business that day. Okay, because it's unacceptable. People who get a 4 needs improvement are given 6 months. If you get 2 NIs or needs improvement, you're out the door. But that's fair warning. You don't want to get an NI. I'm talking overall rating. Okay, overall, you don't want to get an NI. Today and NI again 6 months from today, because that means you did not improve. Okay. In a bell-shaped curve, 80% of people fall under 3. Okay. Very few fall at outstanding, and very few fall at unacceptable. So that's performance evaluation. Work methods evaluation, same rating scale. I want you to think through this and rate yourself. Just put a check. You could put the check in between numbers. If you think you're a 1.5, you put the check, you put the X between 1 and 2. Okay? You get the overall rating for management of tasks, for example, by adding up your ratings and dividing them by the number of lines there are there, which is 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Are you with me?
Yeah.
Okay? So, add up your scores and then divide them by 5, and that's your overall rating for management of tasks. For overall rating analytical skills, you just add it up and divide it by 3. You follow?
Yeah.
Okay. Once you get the overall ratings on the 5, you just add up all the overall ratings and divide them by 5, because there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 methods ratings, all right? So you will then get the overall work method evaluation. You add that to your overall performance evaluation and divide it by 2, you get your overall rating. Okay? Any questions? All right. Take 10 minutes. If you have any questions, just come forward and I'll answer them. This is self-appraisal. It won't be collected, so you can be as honest as you can bear your own honesty. Okay, you should get the average for every work method by dividing the sum of your points by the number of questions there were. Number of items. And then you add up those 5 work method evaluations, divide them by 5 to get your overall work method evaluation. And then you get your overall work method evaluation, add it to your performance evaluation, divide that by 2 to get your overall rating, okay? Any questions? Comments? Okay, let me ask you a question. Have you been evaluated like this before?
By myself?
By your supervisor. Have you been evaluated like this by your supervisor ever? Sorry? Not in this detail, but you have been evaluated. All right. Some of you, the vast majority of you appear not to have been evaluated. Is that correct? How many of you have been evaluated formally. I mean, maybe not in this format, but formally. Raise your hand. Formal evaluation. Okay. How many have not been formally evaluated? Raise your hands. Okay. That's an issue, but we'll deal with that later. Okay. Any questions on the self-appraisal? In the corporate world, performance evaluation, which is one line here, is about 8 to 10 lines, because those are specific targets. In business, like to meet net sales target for 2011, to meet an operating income target for 2011, to stay within budget in 2011. So these are corporate goals. I don't know how to quantify pastoral goals, but there has to be a way, at least administratively, to do that, okay? Otherwise, we will not be able to learn how well we're doing and how well the people who work for us are doing. Any questions on the evaluation? Any questions? Yes, Manny.
So you're saying when you got this from Del Monte, this is a self-appraisal as well that you do?
No, I got this from the performance appraisal form of the company.
So this
I just converted it into a self-appraisal. Yeah. But these are almost the identical questions asked.
Yeah, I know what we've tried to do in recent years with us is there's a self-evaluation, and then there's also the supervisor's evaluation. And I guess it's always interesting to see if there's a difference between the two, because again, I don't know what the tendency is with self-evaluation versus supervisor's evaluation, yeah. Which is higher or lower.
Yeah, unless you're an insecure neurotic, your self-appraisal will be almost always higher than your boss's self-appraisal. Okay. Because as normal egomaniacs, we will tend to love ourselves, as typical sinners, we will tend to love ourselves more than, okay? In Del Monte and in most best practice companies, they give the performance appraisal evaluation form to the subordinate. So I give it to my vice president. I say, Joe, here we go again this year. Here's the form. Okay, give it to me in a week. And then I'm going to do my version. He does his version. When I finish my version, I go to my boss first. And I say, here's my evaluation of Joe, VP Joe. And my boss says, Alex, you're either too strict here, too lenient there. And then we argue it, and then we settle. That's the management position of VP Joe. Then VP Joe and I, we sit down, and we compare notes. In fact, I give him my appraisal and tell him, go over this tonight, and let's sit down tomorrow. And then that's when we get my appraisal and his feedback at the same time, which is a good practice. But the minimum is you do have the form. You do have the form. And it's priceless. Because sometimes we are blindsided. And VP Joe will tell us, Alex, you got to be kidding. I mean, how can you rate me this way in that aspect when blah, 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 blah. And I say, wow, sorry, I didn't get that. And then we change our rating if he convinces me. Okay, but the point is, there is a common denominator, which is an evaluation form. So this is almost exactly verbatim, except that in the real form, there's no I. Okay, it just establishes objectives for his people, organizes to accomplish objectives. So I just converted it into a self-appraisal system. Any other question? Paul.
Would you think there would be any value in doing this with key volunteers?
Absolutely.
And what would that look like?
Under one condition, okay? You cannot appraise until there's a job description. Okay, because otherwise it's like I shoot it, and wherever the bullet hits, I write the target. This is where we go into the structural aspect of people management, and a lot of people think that people management is all touchy feely and being nice and friendly. Sure, but that presumes the structures are there. Okay. You can't be nice without structure. Because otherwise, your organization will have no backbone. And it will be very difficult to work in an environment where there's no structure. Good question, yeah.
So how deep would you go? For example, some of our churches have hundreds, even thousands, I guess, of volunteers. You wouldn't do everybody, would you?
Let me put it this way. You will identify the functions for which the volunteers volunteer. For example, you may have thousands of volunteers, but 200 might be ushers. So what is the ushering job description? What is the job description of usher? Okay. You will find that if there are functions that are manned by volunteers, praise the Lord, you don't have to spend money for them. But you do need to structure that job. What do you expect that job, that person in that job to do? So the volunteer, see, the problem is when we pastors don't structure the jobs of volunteers, volunteers get this funny thing about this attitude of, I'm here already. You still expect me to work? Come on. I volunteer. I showed up already. What else do you want me to do? Well, you showed up for a job, my friend, and here's that job description. You're an usher. You're supposed to smile when you greet people. You can't frown and you know. See, volunteers get the bad attitude of, I showed up already. What else do you want me to do? Because there's a lack of structure. At the same time, volunteers who are very organized are frustrated. Because, you know, the attitude is this. My goodness, if only the pastor knows what a waste he's making of me. I can contribute so much. How come they're not structuring the job? I can do so much. But volunteers don't want to cross the line. They don't want to tell the pastor what to do. There's a lot of pastors are on a pedestal. We are on a pedestal. We must be aware of that. And we must be sensitive. People will not talk to us directly because it's just too much, he's up there. And the problem is people think we know everything. Duh. We can't even figure out the next Sunday sermon. But that's the idea. People think we know everything. That's why they don't tell us anything. And by the way, people think we know what they're thinking. That's why they don't tell us. You must be aware of that so that you can bridge that gap.